comments contained in this podcast do not constitute legal advice. The opinions herein are the opinions of the speakers and not the official opinion of the Hodgson Russ Law Firm. Hey there, tax fans. Welcome to State Tax Talks with me, your host, Joe Tantillo. I'm a tax attorney at the Hodgson Russ Law Firm looking to explore the nuances of state and local tax law. Here on the show, our goal is to keep tax informative, simple, and fun. So if you're ready to talk tax, turn up the volume and dive into this episode of State Tax Talks. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of State Tax Talks with Joe Tantillo. Today, we are having our second ever Happy Minute episode. I'm joined today by Mr. Mark Klein, chairman of Hodgson Russ, who is a guest of the show, featured in our first ever episode.
And most popular, I might add.
As of time of recording, it is currently the most popular.
Just saying.
We are also joined by Mr. Joe Endres, who is a friend of the pod as well. I think this is his third guest appearance on the show.
Third time's a charm.
And first timer, Mr. Josh Lawrence, Hodgson Russ SALT partner and sales and use tax expert extraordinaire. And today's theme du jour is stupid sales tax rules. And the idea for this podcast actually came from Mr. Endres, who thought it would be fun to talk about some of the silly and dumber intricacies of New York State sales tax rules, particularly when you have, you know, maybe one small difference that makes something taxable versus non-taxable. And interestingly enough, Mark, you had recently sent us around an article about a bagel shop that was looking to find a loophole to New York State's sales tax rules. They thought that, you know, to get around the prepared food taxability rules, well, they would just stuff their bagels with cream cheese and provide them to their customers free of New York State sales tax, which is, you know, an interesting distinction. Prepared bagel versus raw bagel, because really you're just paying for toasting and cream cheese spreading services.
Well, sometimes slicing as well.
Slicing is very important. People do tend to like their bagels sliced. I know that when I see someone just bite into a whole bagel, I get a little concerned.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, as you know, the rule is that prepared food is taxable and raw, regular grocery store food isn't. And I guess, you know, New York has to draw the line somewhere. I've always found it particularly interesting that, you know, regular bagels that you just go to the bagel shop and get without having them sliced are not subject to sales tax. But once they slice them, once they smear them, they've got problems, which, by the way, you know, makes me think of something that your listeners might appreciate if they're looking to save a few cents. The same rule applies to donuts. The other rule that New York has is that even baked goods like donuts, which generally aren't taxable, can be taxable if either they're heated or you eat them on premises. So what you need to do is you go to Dunkin' Donuts or wherever you get your donuts. You tell them, I need half a dozen to go. They put them in the bag. You pay no sales tax. Then you sit down. Now, technically, at that point, you owe what they call use tax. Exactly.
Yeah, right.
You need to remit it.
Remit it.
Can you wait till after you're finished?
Mark always uses that line on his income tax return and is sure to pay any use tax that could be due in such situations.
Always.
Well, I like that. I think that this episode might be full of these kinds of fun facts and narrow exemptions to these rules.
Well, our definition of fun may be slightly different than your listeners, but we'll go with that.
True. And we were joking, Joe, actually, before you came in, that by the time this episode releases, it could be Thanksgiving and or Christmas. This could end up being our holiday episode. So who knows? Maybe people will be thinking twice before buying the prepared turkey and just go ahead and get the raw one and, you know, bake it up for however many 18 hours or whatever it takes nowadays.
Save some good money, exactly.
Yeah. So guys, let's talk. What are some of your favorite stupid sales tax rules? And, you know, this is kind of a free-for-all roundtable here. So whoever wants to jump in first, let's hear it.
Sure. And let me just give a little context here. When I had this idea to talk about stupid sales tax rules, I guess the stupid kind of is doing a lot of work there. It covers a lot of situations because we'll talk about stupid things, little rules like cutting a bagel or you know, heating a bagel. And that just... You know, the distinction that creates from a tax perspective is important, but that stupid little distinction is makes all the difference. But stupid to me also includes those situations where I was sitting across from an auditor and they told me a rule or a, you know, the department's position. And I thought to myself, oh my God, that's so stupid. And but that's going to cost my client a ton of money. So when I say stupid, it's yes, it's a small little factual distinction that changes the transaction, but this has very serious ramifications for clients. And let me just give you one of my favorite examples. There is an exemption in New York sales tax for software maintenance. It's 1115-0. It's right in the law, and it says that maintenance services to software should not be taxable, are not taxable, right? So pretty straightforward, right in the law. And I was sitting across the table from an auditor, and we were reviewing software maintenance transactions. And they said, well, this software maintenance is taxable. And I said, well, what do you mean taxable? There's an exemption directly on point. And they said, yeah, but this isn't really just software maintenance. And I said, well, what do you mean? It says software maintenance contract right at the top of the thing. You know, what are you talking about? And they said, well, they're not getting just software maintenance. They're also getting updates to software, patches, mm-hmm. bug fixes. And the problem is this. No software maintenance contract nowadays is actually just software maintenance. You're not just fixing the existing software you've always had. That's just not how software works. You, as part of this maintenance agreement, get these fixes, or as additional security issues come up, they have to patch things or fix things to fix those vulnerabilities. So you're always getting new software as part of these software maintenance agreements. And the auditor says, aha, well, that's not the sale of software maintenance, that's the sale of new software. And in New York State, even though we're calling it a software maintenance contract, even though it's in the context of this ongoing service relationship, they say you're selling new software. And here's the kicker. If you don't separately state that charge for the new software, because of the cheese board rule, talk about another stupid, another stupid rule, but because of the cheese board rule where a taxable thing taints a non-taxable component if it's all charged for one charge or all bundled in one charge, they said the entire maintenance agreement becomes taxable because of this small little amount of new software that comes up. So this had a massive impact. I mean, we're kind of aware of it now. This was many years ago, and we know to look out for it and to, you know, separately state or structure the maintenance agreements so that they are tax efficient. But that, you know, that small little factual distinction, when you think you're dealing with something that is clearly non-taxable, caused a huge headache for many clients years ago. So that's one of the examples of, you know, stupid sales tax rule that caused a big headache for a client.
Yeah, I'll give you one that I found particularly interesting. So it's one that there's a ruling on, and we've talked about it at some of our speeches, and that is the fact that New York taxes candy but does not tax cookies. And so the dilemma came up when Twix, produced by Nabisco, I think it is. And the problem with a Twix is that it is a candy-coated cookie. Mm. So what do you do? Is it candy? Is it a cookie? And New York actually put a study together, and you know, a bunch of people sat in a room and decided how to handle Twix. You know how they handle it, Joe?
Yeah, it was with respect to how it's marketed.
It is. What aisle do you pick it up in?
Exactly.
If you pick it. So now, another you know,
so
point to your
the chocolate doesn't taint the cookie.
Correct.
And if it were in the cookie aisle, right?
Right. The cookie aisle is exempt.
But if it's in the candy aisle, then the chocolate does taint the cookie.
So in order to save your listeners a little bit more money, when you go to the counter, where did you get this, sir? I got it in the cookie aisle. No tax.
Yep. And it's also, you know, again, if you get it off, and I kind of get it. Like if you get it off the end cap in a two-pack of Twix, you know, two Twix come in a pack, that seems more like candy. It's kind of a grab-and-go item. But if you're buying a box of 12 Twixes, that's more like a box of cookies or a, you know, a baked good. And that's how they made that distinction. But it's, by the way, you know, something very interesting is coming up. Mr. Klein seems pretty fixated on the food sales tax.
Yeah, that's all I know. This all comes from personal experience.
I thought you were going to bring up the peeps in this context too. What's a peep, right?
Well, yeah. So the rule there is we tax candy and we don't tax foods for cooking, you know, ingredients. And the big issue for many years was, well, marshmallows. What are marshmallows? Mm-hmm. Well, marshmallows generally are used for cooking, like miniature marshmallows. But jumbo marshmallows, everybody knows those are candy because you put them on a stick and you roast them. So jumbo marshmallows, taxable, miniature marshmallows, not. And then the issue came up at Easter time. What do we do about peeps? They're kind of middle-sized. So what do we do? And the good news is the commissioner back then, I think it was Commissioner Urbach, made an executive decision that, this is ridiculous, all marshmallow items will be exempt. And so I give the department some credit. But let me throw out one that I find particularly interesting that doesn't necessarily involve food, and that is dog walking. So what do you think, Joe? Dog walking, is that taxable?
Yeah, I think it's maintenance to tangible personal property.
So that maintenance to tangible personal property is taxable, but New York has a ruling that says if all you're doing is walking the dog, that is not an enumerated service. But if, God forbid, you were to give that dog water or food when it comes back, that is maintenance to tangible property. And that's why grooming services are taxable, because it's maintenance to tangible personal property.
That one is really stupid. Yeah.
Well, it's pretty crass in general to just think of your pets as tangible personal property. Right?
That rule is rough.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. He did not just say that.
I thought that's why I was invited. here.
It is. Well, yeah. That one's interesting, too, because, sometimes in the residency context with dogs and pets in particular, depending on the auditor, they might be near and dear or they might be family. So, I'd love to wield that back at them.
So speaking of pets and animals, I was going over the rules for veterinary services before this, because I remember there were some strange rules in there. And I guess the point is, we don't want to tax the vet as being a repairman to your tangible personal property. So you can purchase veterinary services free from tax. But then there's all these attendant rules, and they go through them, and the examples are just so funny. So one of them is that a vet can sell food and items that are related to the care and keeping of animals or household animals and poultry, but if it sells the animals or poultry, it's subject to tax. So there's a just a funny example. It just says, so a bird vet sells bird cages, bird food, and other sundry bird items. Those are non-taxable. But when the vet sells birds, the bird is taxable.
what a one-stop shop that would be. You can buy the bird from me, all the things, and when the bird gets sick, I'll make it better.
So I can't believe I'm going to go here, but in keeping with the animal theme, I had this particular case, and this was a situation with, again, dogs, except it was with respect to breeding. And so the question at hand was whether or not the sale of an animal for stud services is subject to sales tax. And this is the problem with sales tax, because sales tax is such a fact-specific tax that you really do have to understand how the transaction unfolds. What are you really selling? And here it became, we had to figure out, was this the sale of the animal for, let's just say, the old-fashioned way you would—
Sale of a service.
Sale of a service, right.
Or
was this—
baby animals.
No. Or are you selling the animals?
Oh, the actual, the product.
And so at the end of the day, I mean, for the most part here, because animals are tangible personal property, it was taxable. But, that just illustrates the facts. You really have to get into the facts of a case in order to determine its taxability. And speaking of which, Mark, didn't you have an animal-related resale case?
Yeah. So the question here was, obviously sales tax is an end tax, right? It's a tax on the consumer at the end of the process. So if there's manufacturing, all the things that go into the final product aren't supposed to be taxable because the final product is. So the issue we had was that we also had a dog breeder. And the dog breeder, of course, had dog cages, which are clearly taxable, but they also went through a lot of dog food. And in New York, you get a resale exemption if whatever you're buying is found as a physical component part or as such in whatever you're selling. So if I'm selling you a pencil and it includes lead, I can buy the pencil casing and the lead exempt because I'm actually transferring that to you. The question was, when you buy the dog, are you also buying the food? Because the food does become a part of the dog. And this case, actually, there was precedent out there called Marshall Farms. And indeed, the answer is that it is not subject to sales tax when you buy food, because a part of the dog, first of all, if you slice the dog open, lengthwise, not widthwise, lengthwise, you will actually find food, unless the dog is a fast digester. But more importantly, it's in its muscles, and you will find dog food, more than just a tad of it. So there you go.
Am I wrong, or did we possibly win a case with a car wash where we had argued that the detergent was purchased for resale because it remained on your car?
That's right. Yep. Mm-hmm. That's exactly right. Yeah, there's a famous case called Finch Pern that decided in the 70s, Joe. Where were you in the 70s?
It depends on what part of the 70s.
But anyway, that was a company that sold sweaters. And one of the things they did before selling them is they cleaned them, and they wanted to take an exemption for soap that went into the clean sweaters. And they were able to prove that soap crystals did exist on the sweaters that people would purchase. And so they got the exemption, which is kind of interesting because a lot of folks have tried to use that logic, especially, you know, in our part of the world, snow plowing. Snow plowers say, well, look, I'm buying salt, which, you know, I'm reselling because I plow the driveway and the salt stays there. And the answer from the department is not so much.
Nope, first of all, dissolved.
It's dissolved. It doesn't remain as such. And therefore, unless you're really sloppy with the salt and you spread it all over in places that don't need it, you don't get the exemption for that.
So I could say I'm bad at my job. I really and therefore.
So let me, since we're on resale, let me see if I can stump the panel. And this is one that I came across not too long ago where, you know, in order to get the resale exemption, in order to buy something tax-free because you intend to resell it, you have to, you know, again, resell the product. That's it's called the resale exemption. Well, what about a situation where I know I'm going to offer a promotion to my customers that's like a buy one, get one free? So they're paying for one and they're getting another one free. Can I buy all of those things for resale tax-free?
I would say absolutely yes, because there's no such thing as a free item. You're paying for you're paying a lesser price for two items. Just like if, you know, somebody, it's just like the free lunch, right? There's no such thing as a free lunch. I would say that they're both subject to the exemption because you are selling both of them, although you choose to sell them together for one price.
How's it stated on the invoice? Both items listed?
So the way that the tax department actually answered this, interestingly enough, was you can buy them for resale, but only if the price for which you're selling them is above cost. You have to make a profit on this in order for it to be a resale, a purchase for resale. So now we've got to know, what did I buy it for? Is there a markup or is this a loss? And part of me said, well, what about loss leaders? Well, what about
most businesses aren't in the business of losing money, though, right?
No, absolutely. But some you do. Loss leader transactions where you're willing to take a bath in order to gain market share. You're willing to lose some money in the short term to, you know, gain a presence in a market.
Right.
And can that be purchased for resale? There's a question there based on the authority that's out there. Okay. So these are the ones where, you know, it's pretty much you're always buying the exact same thing. And something that's kind of difficult to know can change the taxability. So let me just give you an example. Home inspections, right? If I sell a home inspection to Joe Endres, homeowner, right? I'm getting ready to sell my house. I want to know what it's worth. Are there any problems? You know, are there any structural issues? Or, you know, I want to price it appropriately. So I get a home inspection to understand what a potential buyer is going to find or what they're going to worry about. And so I get it, and they give me this report that tells me all about my house. And the question is, do I pay sales tax on that? Well, the answer is yes, I do, because that is part of maintenance to real property. We tax maintenance to real property in New York. And knowing about a problem is the first step to fixing it, according to the department. So this is a taxable service. Now, let's just take that transaction and flip it just a little bit. Now I'm Joe home buyer. I'm buying that house that's up for sale, and I have my own home inspector come in to tell me what's wrong with it. Is it worth what they're asking for? I want to know what's going on with the house. Well, now suddenly, you know, it's the exact same report. I'm going to the same vendor, getting the exact same report. What's wrong with the house? Is that same report, that identically same report, is that subject to sales tax? The answer is no, right? Mainly because I'm not the homeowner. How could I be maintaining, if we're taxing it because it's maintenance to real property, how can I as a prospective buyer be maintaining something that I don't own? So the exact same thing, depending on who buys it, changes the taxability of the transaction.
Well, it's even worse than that, right? There, I can give you a couple of examples of where you buy something and depending on how you use it. So notwithstanding how you bought it, but how do you use it? So for example, baking soda. Baking soda, the assumption is that you buy baking soda because you're going to bake something. But believe it or not, some people have taken baking soda and put it in the refrigerator as a deodorizer. And that, my
friends, really works.
It does. Well, but again, that you've now turned that into a taxable item because refrigerator deodorizers are taxable. And once again, Joe, another reason to file a use tax return.
Right.
One of my favorite ones comes up, again, probably around Thanksgiving time, Halloween, and that is pumpkins. are pumpkins subject to sales tax? And what do you think?
Oh, so I'm going to guess that typically as like a raw food item, no. But if you turn them into a decoration, they are.
You've got it. I mean,
who eats pumpkins?
The farmer is supposed to look you in the eye and say, excuse me, sir, what do you plan to do with this pumpkin? Because if the answer is you're going to eat it, then that's great. But if you're going to carve holes in it, you got an issue.
Okay, now hang on. Does anybody have a tally of the food items that we're talking about and who's on what tab? We got baking soda and pumpkins now to add.
I wish that we had video capabilities at this point because we would have like a bumper at the bottom of the screen going, food items discussed, just going up and up.
Well, what's funny on that note is that when you talk about how the item is going to be used, you know, there's an exemption for, we've talked about it before, if you use something in manufacturing, a certain piece of equipment, or a certain, you know, material, it's got to be used directly and predominantly in manufacturing. There's a 50% test. And there's some, you know, just funny examples that the department itself has put in publications. So one exemption that's available is if you buy property for use in a commercial horse boarding operation, and it's directly and predominantly for use. If you buy a truck for your farm, your horse farm, you got to use that 50% for farming and not for your own pleasure. But one of the examples in the publication about this exemption is a vet provides a border collie for use on a horse farm. And it doesn't say anything about the 50% rule, but you better watch that dog to make sure that that dog is 50% of the time herding, you know, your horses or your cattle.
You get
and
back
not
to
just
work
being
lazy.
A family dog, because then you, again, you might owe use tax.
I can't believe you're going to bring up, you know, manufacturing and those rules and not talk about our all-time favorite case. Let me set the stage here for a second. I am, you know, a senior associate, I think, at the time, and I'm, you know, up and coming in Hudson Russ, trying to, you know, grow my business and my career here. And a certain senior partner, chairman of the firm, comes into my office and he goes, "Hey, Joe, I know you like sales tax, right? You love working on sales tax cases." And I go, "Oh, absolutely. I love sales tax." And then he goes, "Oh, and you like working in New York City, right? You like working out of our Manhattan office." And I, "Absolutely. I love getting into the city. I love going down there." Well, Mark says, "Well, Joe, do I have a case for you? Here you go." And 2 days later, I was standing in the largest human waste treatment facility on the East Coast. And, you know, I did, of course, what any up-and-coming young associate would do. I immediately said, "Hey, Josh, I've got this amazing case for you."
And I love sales tax.
And Josh loves sales tax. So, you know, you might think, well, what the heck does sales tax have to do with human waste processing? Well, the question in that case was whether or not this machinery that they had purchased for taking the human waste and turning it into fertilizer qualified for the manufacturing exemption and could be purchased tax-free.
We wouldn't let Joe back into the office for about 2 weeks.
That was such a bait and switch. I just remember staring at this just river of, you know, all coming from New York City to this this facility. It was quite an experience.
You've had some interesting case experiences out in the field. You got bit by that dog. You had to go to a human waste facility.
Yep.
Should write a book.
Okay, so let me mention the other one that I mentioned that you know, the change is subtle, but it just drives me crazy. So here it has to do with capital improvements, right? And capital improvements to real property are not subject to tax. It's got to pass a three-part test to be a capital improvement. And one of those requirements, one of the prongs of that test is that it has to be intended to be permanent. So what trips up a lot of people? We have a lot of people that come to us in the middle of a sales tax audit and they say, "Hey, you know, they're looking at our capital expenditures." And one of the things we did was a complete overhaul of our office space. We went down to studs, changed the entire office, got a whole new thing in here. That's got to be a capital improvement, right? We went down to studs. It's a whole new office. And normally that would qualify as a capital improvement. The problem is, in these cases, is that they're often in leased spaces. And when there is a leased space, there's at least the possibility that this is not intended to be permanent, because some lease contracts require tenants to return the premises to their original state at the end of
30 years, maybe.
Yeah, maybe. Right, exactly.
But it doesn't matter.
Long-term leases, but it doesn't matter. So if you have that bad language in your lease that you've got to get it back to its original condition, then how can an improvement that you've made be intended to be permanent, right? And you fail that third prong of the capital improvement test just because you have this language sitting somewhere in a lease agreement.
Contractors really do get the short end of the stick in many of these situations, especially trying to figure out if something is a capital improvement or isn't. I had a case not too long ago where somebody was involved in building new homes, and he would talk to the homeowner, and if you wanted to have nicer cabinets, you'd pay an extra amount. And what he did is he charged sales tax, because if you go to Home Depot, you go to Lowe's, you get a cabinet, it's subject to sales tax. Well, it turns out that everything that's part of a capital improvement is exempt to the homeowner, whether it's a cabinet, whether it's the floor, whether it's the initial coat of paint. So technically, he was wrong. He should not have charged sales tax. But here's the problem. The contractor should have paid sales tax when he bought the cabinets from Lowe's or Home Depot. He didn't qualify for the resale exemption. So the auditor said, I don't care the fact that you collected it. That's nice. But now we want you to pay sales tax on every single cabinet you've ever purchased because you should have paid it. To which the contractor said, okay, fine. So I'll get a refund for all the tax I collected. No, you don't. The homeowner may get a refund, but you don't get that refund. All you were was a conduit, right? You collected the tax on behalf of the state from the homeowner. So you've got to pay it. And the homeowner may or may not get a refund. That's up to the homeowner, but you'll never see that money. That's a tough one.
Yeah, that's a hard pill to swallow.
And these capital improvement rules have been coming up a lot in a practice that's growing that I've been working with, and that's the development of renewable energy. So you've got these solar farms, right? And these are super expensive, not either a solar farm or maybe an energy storage, battery energy storage. These batteries, you know, come with housing and they're bolted onto the ground. They cost millions of dollars. So the question is, is any of this a capital improvement? And the problem is most of these projects are put up on leased land, and the leases may go for 40, 45 years. But there is that language that says that the property has to be restored at the end of the lease. It just – these projects have to go to an IDA because they can't get a capital improvement designation for the roads, for the batteries. You know, the batteries are bolted into concrete foundations, but the rule says that if it's not affixed in a way that's going to cause damage to the thing that's being attached, it's not a capital improvement. So they've got to go back and say, is there a way that we can weld it onto the, onto a steel frame that's embedded into the concrete, or is it bolt? So it causes a real issue. And some of these rules, even though they sound kind of stupid, they have real consequences.
Well, let me give you one that sounds kind of stupid because it is kind of stupid. So New York City taxes gyms, gymnasiums, and workout facilities. And so the question came up, is Pilates subject to sales tax? Pilates classes, Pilates, training. And the answer is yes. It's part of, a workout facility. It's part of the gym. And that makes sense. Then the question came up, well, what about yoga? And what do you think, Joe?
Well, I'm going to guess that the state tried to say it sure is.
No, in fact, they said, of course yoga isn't taxable because in yoga you breathe. Mr. Anders knows I'm telling the truth.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, apparently when you do Pilates, there's not a lot of breathing going on, but yoga does involve breathing. So if you are in the future, if you'd like to impose sales tax on your yoga, just hold your breath and then they'll have to charge tax.
That's so dumb.
Let me give you another one, which I love. And this just, again, turns on where the transaction happens now. So let's say I go and get my haircut here in God's country, beautiful Buffalo, New York. Do I pay sales tax on that?
No.
Heck no.
No, you do not. Absolutely. But let's say, I'm working out of our Manhattan office and I'm on trial and I want to get a quick haircut, freshen up. Is that taxable?
Heck yeah.
Heck yeah. Yeah. Just because it's done within the five boroughs. We've got a different rule for New York City transactions. And so the exact same transaction is taxable there. But let me deepen the water a little bit here. Let's say I have hair restoration services performed. I'm going to get plugs or get, hair implanted. Is that subject to sales tax?
I don't know if I know the answer.
Yeah, I don't think I know the answer either. But I would say yes, because it's more cosmetic than it is medical.
Okay, so
are you buying the hair?
But is
that tangible personal property?
The answer is that it depends on who does it. A doctor or a plastic surgeon, someone that's an MD, does not have to charge sales tax because those are medical services and we don't tax them. But if you don't have that degree, if you're not an MD and it's not a medical service, then it would be taxable as just, you know, a cosmetic or, you know, anything, any other type of beauty service, et cetera.
Well, look, let's get back to food, because really that's where we should focus more of our time.
Well, it's the holiday season right now, exactly, for all our listeners.
So here's one that I've always found fascinating, and that is the resale exemption that McDonald's and Burger King and all the rest of them go through. And that is, you know, when they buy hamburger meats, when they buy whatever, of course it's for resale. That's what you're buying. But what about the napkin? What about the straws? What about the stirrers? What about the thing that the hamburger comes in? What about the cups for the cup of coffee? Taxable as resale, Joe? What do you think?
I would think so. You're getting it as part of the transaction as the end customer. Like,
I mean, yeah, New York's, yeah. I think, one of the highest courts in the Burger King case said, not so much. If it's instrumental and critical to what you're buying, you can't buy a cup of coffee without the cup. But you can certainly buy a hamburger without a napkin. And I think the court's rationale was, that's why God gave us sleeves.
What about the paper that you wrap the hamburger
in? That is exempt.
Yes. Okay.
That's part of what you're buying, a wrapped hamburger.
So carton for the French fries,
yep,
the little bag that they put the chicken nuggets in.
Yes.
That's all exempt.
But
napkin, no.
Straws?
Straw?
No, and my wife won't even use straws these days because she loves turtles or something.
So what do you think bottled water would be taxed as or not taxed as?
I would have thought that it was just a raw food product akin to, you know, an apple. But the fact that you're asking me is making me second guess myself. That's
one of those crazy anomalies with the food designations. They spend so much time designating, you know, stuff with 70% real fruit juice,
right,
is considered a food. If it has less than 70%, then it's a soda or something. That's the thing. You know, we've got clients that sell a bunch of different food items, you know, at a business. They have a little cabinet that, you know, sells sodas and foods, and they've got it all right except bottled water.
And is it a carve out for bottled water, or no, is that considered prepared?
By
or?
Pipes and mains.
Yes.
By specific
pipes
exemption.
And mains.
Pipes and mains.
That's what I was going to say, is that, right, like to totally
you bottle
the looking gas. You get it out of a faucet, that's free. You don't have to pay for that, but you get it in a bottle, suddenly taxable.
That's wild.
And that one makes no sense to me. I could see the difference between candy and cookies.
Candy versus cookie, it's like, okay, it's like a debate that maybe some stoners had one time.
But I can buy, you know, Juicy Juice because it's 70% fruit juice, tax-free, but not a bottle of water.
Maybe we do need a life necessities exemption.
Again, focusing back on food, where our client sold what you would think would be exempt, they sold cookies. And the nice angle that they had is these were primarily marketed to college students. So these are cookies that you'd want to eat at 3 a.m. And of course, when you're a college student, you want your warm cookies. You want hot cookies. And Joe, how did that go?
Not well. you know, they said that this was food in a heated state, and food in a heated state is subject to sales tax in New York. And what's
wait a second. So I go to the local grocery store and I buy a loaf of bread and it's hot. What happens then?
Well, that's just good timing. That's what that is. I mean, that was a baked good that is not taxable that just happened to come out of the oven. But, and that's kind of the distinction that was made in this case, is that the warmth, the ooey gooeyness when you break apart that cookie, that was part of its marketing. And so that kind of changed. The heated part is what you're selling. It's the warm prepared cookie. And so that ultimately ended up being taxable.
And I think a lot of these, you know, humorous distinctions are only because the tax department's got to draw the line somewhere, right?
Right.
And it's where they draw the line that may or may not make sense. I mean, one of my favorite areas is the clothing exemption. In New York, clothing and footwear that's under $110 is exempt from the state tax, and in many counties as well. But what is clothing and what isn't? You know, is it costume clothing? Well, the state says no. And some of the interesting distinctions they came up with to me were just fascinating. One of them is, if you buy regular shoes, of course, shoes are shoes, walking shoes, sneakers. But if you buy hiking shoes, those are subject to sales tax because they're not regular shoes. They're specialty shoes. And the concern is if you buy these hiking shoes and you walk on a flat surface, you're good to go. But if you start to walk up an incline, I do think you've got a use tax problem. the other one I like was gloves, right? Are gloves subject to sales tax? And the answer is no. So a pitcher's glove or a outfielder's glove? Well, no, that's taxable. Certain gloves are taxable because it's more of a sporting good. I guess that's the idea with hiking boots too.
Right.
Believe it or not, I came across one that cut the other way with that. Like, I didn't understand it. There was the distinction is a headband and or a sweatband.
I've seen that one.
Subject to sales tax. So a headband, I guess something you just wear on your head to keep your hair back or something, and a sweatband. Again, functionally or physically the same thing, a piece of material worn around the head, but this one, I guess, catches sweat. But here they went the other way.
The issue, Joe, is once you get whatever you're putting on your head, run around and it's exempt. Because the sweatband is exempt.
Right. But why? Isn't it a piece of sporting equipment, you know, similar to the sneakers versus the shoes?
I think so. LeBron James famously wore them every year in the NBA Finals. That's what it's most famous for.
Track him down for sales tax.
I think the headband is more ornamental.
Exactly. That's what they compared it to. It's more like a barrette or not an item of clothing, but rather a item of jewelry or something like that, which isn't subject to the exemption.
And plus, when you're wearing the sweatband, you're breathing.
That was one of the ones that seemed to not consistent with other authority.
I agree.
Yeah. And they've got to make those same distinctions in differentiating things that you would buy for either medical or non-medical purposes.
Right.
And if you look at the publication that the department publishes, it's just, I mean, there's just hundreds and hundreds of examples, and they make some sense, but some of them don't make a lot of sense. I think you can buy cotton balls and you'll pay tax unless they're sterile. If you buy sterile cotton balls, then they must be for medical purposes. But if they're not sterile, it's just a beauty item.
And I guess one of the things your listeners need to be aware of is, you do want to be a little careful, especially if you go to a drugstore because of this medical exemption. Certain things are covered, certain things are not. I know when I was teaching many years ago at the University of Buffalo, I had a student who came up to me and told me a really tale of woe. He had taken my class on sales tax, and we talked about a lot of the medical exemptions and things like that. And he said, Mr. Klein, you went through the whole thing with us, and condoms, I understand, were not subject to sales tax. I said, that is actually correct. He said, well, I got to tell you, I was, going to the drugstore the other day and was not exactly excited about it. It's sort of embarrassing. But I go to the clerk and I, get my box of condoms, and I also got a magazine, and I also got some candy bars, and, just put the whole thing together. And she rang it up and she hit me with sales tax on the condoms. And I said to her, look, I've gone to Mark Klein's class. Condoms aren't taxable. And then she gets on the loudspeaker for the entire store and says, Charlie, this is aisle 4. Are condoms subject to sales tax? So the good news was no, but the bad news was he was embarrassed even further. So you want to be careful. In New York, if you go to a cabaret or a nightclub or a comedy club, it's taxable. But New York has an exemption for dramatic or musical performances. And Josh, I think you and I many years ago dealt with a business that had, is what they're doing musical or dramatic? And there was a pretty famous case involving Howard Stern. And Howard Stern sold out a house, and they said this was exempt from tax because it is a dramatic performance. And New York said, no, humor is not dramatic. And more importantly, a dramatic episode has to be scripted. And Mr. Stern seemed to be ad-libbing a lot. And that made the distinction between a taxable event or a non-taxable event.
We had that same issue with one of the Cirque du Soleil shows. There were Cirque du Soleil shows that were covered by advisory opinions issued by the department saying they're a circus, because a circus doesn't count as a dramatic or musical performance. They came to us to make sure that they had a position that their current performance was not a circus and it was a dramatic, scripted play. And we watched it 3 times and, we came up with a narrative to try to get a ruling for them. And they got the ruling that it was a dramatic or musical performance because there was a storyline, even though it was told through skateboarding and acrobatics. And it was about this kid. It was about this kid, and he missed winter and he went to go get winter back. And, all his friends were skateboarded. And somehow we convinced him that this was not a circus, even though it was Cirque du Soleil.
Pretty famous case went to New York's highest court, the Court of Appeals, involved table dancers and lap dancers. And the court basically had to watch videos of these dancers and concluded that there was no common theme. It was just kind of moving around and jumping and hopping.
Except for one very adamant judge in the minority opinion.
Well, what's interesting is one of my partners, Jeff Switek, and I had this case because there was also a question about independent contractors and employees. And so he and I actually went to one of those clubs. And I, of course, being the naive one of the group, said, what is this lap dance? And so I'm not joking. And so the woman said, oh, let me show you. It was his research, Joe. You went to a human waste facility.
Would you have called it performance or would you have not called it performance?
I don't know that it was really scripted. which is, you know, the most important criterion, they say.
This is definitely our most wild episode. People out there are going to be like, what? Make this the regular podcast. Just ridiculous stories.
Joe, there's only so many funny food sales tax rules.
Yeah. Call your local state legislator and have them make more stupid sales tax rules. Well, actually, you know, please don't do that.
And not all of them are stupid. Some of them are really can hurt people. So in New York, if you lease a car for, you know, most people get like a 3-year lease, sales tax is due on the day you buy the car. So even if you're leasing, you got to pay all the sales tax up front. Your first payment has to include sales tax on the entire vehicle, and then you pay it off over the next 3 years. And there were a number of cases when this law first came out. A person would get their car, they'd pay their sales tax, and they would drive immediately into an elm tree and total the car. And so they had insurance, and so they got a brand new car and brand new sales tax on the car.
Man.
There was no trade-in exemption. There was no nothing. The person said, I paid 1 month. I still have, you know, 2 years and 11 months to go before I pay for it. And New York's position is no. All of the sales tax is due on day one. You owe it again 1 month later. So be careful how you drive.
Yeah, we had a whole industry that got caught up with the rental rules in New York City. The businesses that lease cars to Uber drivers. You know, the rule that Mark was talking about was on 12-month or longer leases, the taxes all due up front. But on rentals, if they are short-term rentals in New York City, there's probably five layers of tax. There's New York City tax. There's a rental tax, special rental tax. There's the regular sales tax rate. It's about 19% or something like that. So if I go to Hertz at the airport, I pay 19% to rent a car. And the tax department was holding these guys accountable for 18% sales tax when they're leasing them to Uber drivers. And they would get caught up in these audits and they'd say, I mean, if I charged an Uber driver 18% every month, you know, sales tax on the lease, they'd go out of business. I mean, their margins are so small anyway, but there was really no solution. We said, you could just have regular sales tax due if you have year leases that they would be due up front. And they said, no, we can't do that. You know, they won't sign a year lease. And so, you know, a lot of the audits, they let them go and sort of just gave them a slap and said, start doing it right. But I don't even know what happened with that industry because it was tough.
No, I pick your poison. Holy cow.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of transportation, there's another interesting nuance. In New York, of course, the rental of tangible property is subject to tax. Many services aren't. And so the question is, if I rent a car, is it subject to tax? Well, as Josh just said, sure, absolutely. Well, what if I have a car service take me from here to there? Not necessarily taxable. You know, there are certain black car services and other rules that have kicked in. But generally, if I'm getting a person to run the equipment or run the car, then I'm buying a service. Well, what if I direct that person? Then am I renting a car or a service? And so it's sort of interesting because the rule is, you know, if you're renting a limousine service, that is a car service, that is a transportation service and isn't necessarily subject to sales tax, unless the limousine is following a hearse, in which case that limousine is required to follow the hearse or you'll have very unhappy family members. And therefore, you are directing the usage of that vehicle. And therefore, since it's directed, you are in fact leasing the vehicle. Joe, we see this in one of the regulations about a guy who rents a backhoe and rents it with an operator. Is that the rental of a backhoe and an operator, or is it a digging service? Hmm. And it all depends on how much control you have over the guy or lady who's doing the digging. The more control you assert, the more you've become the renter of the property and not the user of the service. It's kind of an interesting distinction.
That's a very interesting one.
Let me throw one out to the panel. I want to join a country club. Subject to sales tax?
Depends on whether or not it's a membership and you have an ownership interest in
right.
the club.
Okay. So if it's a member club where the members vote on the new person and they basically own the club, then yes, that is subject to sales tax. And in fact, not only is it taxable, but everything they do is taxable. So even like swimming lessons, which generally would not be a taxable event, are taxable if they're done by a country club. But if it's one of those country clubs, they call it a country club, but it's really, you know, you pay $100 a month or $1,000 a month and you're a member and nobody has to, you know, look at your bona fides, that isn't subject to sales tax because that's a service, I guess. That's just a golfing facility that you're participating in. So I've always found that particularly interesting too because we see this with luncheon clubs in New York City. And, you know, if you can choose your member, then it becomes a problem. But most clubs, even those that have a fixed fee, you know, wouldn't want someone like me in their club. So they might have some kind of, you know, system of making sure that that doesn't happen. And it, at one point, it turns you taxable, which is kind of interesting.
That's very interesting. That one I would have guessed wrong.
Yeah, we had a country club on Long Island that wanted to not tax its members anymore because its members were complaining. And they were willing to do away with being exclusive. They just made it really expensive so that you know, they'd get the right people. But we took out, you know, we rewrote their agreement so that it had no, you know, members couldn't control and vote on who got in or out, and removed the other restrictions, and it was enough to allow them to stop charging sales.
My goodness, there's so many auditors right now just getting a Rolodex of all the clubs in right. Right outside the city.
Well, Joe, I know we're running out of time, and I wanted to bring us full circle, not only with food, but with bagels.
Wonderful.
Because we see these problems not just in the way bagels are taxed or not taxed, but we also see them in the way auditors conduct audits. And many years ago, I had an audit of a series, a chain of bagel stores on Long Island. And the auditors were concerned that they didn't just sell raw bagels, which are, of course, exempt, but they also sold sandwiches. And during the week, they certainly did sell sandwiches. And so the question in the audit was the ratio, you know, how much, what percentage of your sales are taxable as sandwiches, what percentage are just raw bagels. And the client didn't have fantastic records. So the auditors sent, or the audit team, went to every one of these stores across Long Island, Monday through Friday, watched every single transaction and determined that this store sold a lot more sandwiches than they said. And the response from the store was, wait a second, you don't realize most of the time that we're selling dozens and dozens of raw bagels are Saturdays and Sundays. People come in, you know, 5 dozen bagels. You've got to look at a Sunday, to which the auditor said, that's nice, but we don't work Sundays. So, yep. Wanted to bring it full circle.
That's perfect. That is an excellent place for us to bring this conversation to an end with a perfectly round bagel-shaped bow. So thank you all for joining the panel today. This was definitely one of my favorite episodes to record, and I hope, Joe, that it fulfilled all of your wildest dreams for what you had envisioned for the show. I'm going to give you an executive producer credit in the bumper for this one.
Moving up in the world.
Yeah, maybe it'll bump his ratings. His,
you know, there you go.
Yeah, and I don't want my participation to bump up his ratings. That doesn't seem fair.
We're going to have to differentiate it out. So if you listen to this episode, write a review and say, if you liked it, was it because of Mark or was it because of Joe? And then we'll tally those up and distribute the results. Thanks again, folks, for listening. If you like the episode, please give us, you know, a 5-star review on your favorite podcast platform. And we are now officially on YouTube as well, so you can listen to us there also if that's your preferred method of taking in podcast audio. Until next time, this is State Tax Talks. I am Joe Tantillo, and we'll be back. Thanks for joining us for another episode of State Tax Talks. If you're interested in listening to more episodes, we're available on all platforms where podcasts can be found, including YouTube. If you enjoyed this episode of State Tax Talks with Joe Tantillo, please give us a 5-star review on your favorite podcast platform. And if you're in need of a tax professional, you can contact the tax attorneys at Hodgson Russ. Go to www.hodgsonruss.com for more information. And until next time, I'm Joe Tantillo, and this is State Tax Talks. Catch you later, tax fans. Comments contained in this podcast do not constitute legal advice. The opinions herein are the opinions of the speakers and not the official opinion of the Hodgson Russ Law Firm.